Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Thanks for starting your week with us.
Follow me, boys, follow me. When you think you're really meek, that's the time to lift your feet.
What do you think of when I say the Boy Scouts? Is it campfires, outdoor adventures, and adorable young people?
On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the Scout law, to help other people at all times, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight.
And follow me.
Founded in 1910 with the mission of preparing young men to, quote, make ethical and moral choices over their lifetimes by instilling in them the values of the Scout oath and law, many think of the Boy Scouts with warmth and respect. I mean, since its inception, more than 130 million young people have taken the Scout oath, and more than 35 million adult volunteers have served as Scout mentors. Today, with approximately 2.2 million participants, it remains one of the largest youth organizations in the country. But that is not the only story of the Boy Scouts.
I can't tell you how frightening it was to have to go on a Boy Scout camp.
Those tents, those campgrounds, those church basements, you won't think about it. It's horrible.
I refuse to believe that this is something I can just place on one person, because it was a culture that allowed for the worst things to happen since the moment they were founded.
These are just a few of the voices of the tens of thousands of people who have alleged experiences of physical and sexual abuse committed by adult leaders of the Boy Scouts. They were speaking here in an NBC News special back in May of 2021. More than 82,000 survivors of alleged abuse have filed claims against the Boy Scouts during the past decade. And fearing financial ruin, in February 2020, the Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy. Late last month, a bankruptcy court approved most aspects of the Boy Scouts' plan to establish a $2.7 billion trust to pay restitution to victims. $2.7 billion. I mean, it sounds like an enormous amount of money, and it is. But given that there are tens of thousands of claimants, the restitution paid to each person would be quite modest, an average of about $33,000 each. And for many, it will be far less. Victims can take a payment of $3,500, or they could ask to be considered for higher amounts, depending on the severity of their claims. Surely, it will take years to review all of those cases. And while a judge approved most of the details of the plan last month, some are still in question. If it goes through, no further claims of past sexual abuse can be brought against the Boy Scouts of America or its chapters. In this moment, there's a fiscal question the Boy Scouts are facing: where to find the money to fund the settlement trust. And at least part of that answer is land.
My name is Molly Osberg. I am a freelance writer and reporter.
Molly Osberg's recent piece for Curbed is titled The Great Boy Scouts Land Sell-Off, and it details why 250 or so local Boy Scout chapters are selling off about 2,000 camps around the country.
When all of these suits sort of got rolled into the bankruptcy, there were a set of agreements that were part of the bankruptcy agreement. And part of that was that there was a set amount that local chapters were required to pay into this victims' compensation fund, right? So now you have this, really the only assets that the Boy Scouts have at this point are these lands. And often they have a very clear incentive to let them out to the highest bidder. It's interesting because it's actually been very difficult to figure out exactly how much land local chapters own across the country, because they're so distributed and operated on a local level. But we're talking about, you know, beautiful lakefront property, huge tracts of ranch land, very desirable land all across the country. We don't know exactly how much land. An estimation from one of the attorneys that I spoke with in the course of reporting this story estimated that that land could be worth anywhere between $8 and $10 billion.
Now, the land came to many of these Boy Scout chapters as gifts. philanthropic donations that trusted the Boy Scouts to conserve and to preserve this land in ways consistent with the highest ideals of scouting.
In some cases, developers are buying it. In some cases, off-road courses are buying it. And I think, you know, there are a couple things going on here. One is that a lot of people are really attached to these spaces, people who had grown up near them or attended camps there. Another is that, you know, the wealthy industrialists and ranchers who often donated this land, you know, 100 years ago had written into the deeds that these were, you know, intended for young people to enjoy the outdoors. So in some cases, local chapters have gone to court to fight the terms of those agreements. In some cases, state governments have filed lawsuits against local Boy Scout chapters in order to stall the development of these lands and try to get them into land trusts. So it's sort of this interesting vector between government interests, private interests, and conservationists.
One of these properties is Deer Lake.
You can put some real challenges and excitement into your summers at Deer Lake Cub Scout and Weebelow Summer Camp. Deer Lake covers 253 acres in Killingworth, Connecticut, and every inch is designed to add fun to your outdoor adventure. It's the perfect place for Cub Scouts and Weeblos to take their parents camping. At first, Deer Lake may look like a typical New England farm, but your camp experience here will be more like an exciting outdoor adventure filled with memories of the great outdoors.
Now, Deer Lake is owned by a local Boy Scout chapter, the Connecticut Yaqui Council. Now, the council already paid its $2.6 million share of the settlement to the National Boy Scouts of America with funds from its endowment and by handing ownership over of the camp that it owned. Still, in February, citing fiscal responsibility, it announced its intention to sell Deer Lake to a real estate developer called Fortitude Capital for $4.6 million. Two other conservation-minded groups reportedly made smaller bids. Now, the announcement sparked public outrage. Locals launched a Save Deer Lake campaign, and the Connecticut Attorney General launched an inquiry into the legality of the sale. Conservationists filed a lawsuit.
My name is Keith Ainsworth. I'm an environmental lawyer based in New Haven, Connecticut.
Keith Ainsworth also serves as chair of the Connecticut Council of Environmental Quality, which advises the governor, state legislature, and state agencies on environmental policy. Keith is also an Eagle Scout.
Scouting was a big influence on me as a young man. It was a noble organization. My scoutmaster was actually a drill sergeant from World War I. Even then, in the early 70s, he was a very fit man. He could outrun and out, do more push-ups than most of us. But he was very much into teaching us to be good patriotic citizens. And not in the current modern sense of patriotism, but in the sort of classic sense of just being a good citizen of your community and being an officer and a gentleman kind of thing. He was raising us to be men of good character. And I think I learned those lessons, and I've carried them with me. In fact, I still have my scout handbook.
Following the Connecticut Yaqui Council's announcement of its intent to sell Deer Lake to Fortitude Capital, Keith filed a lawsuit. At the center of the suit was a bird sanctuary on the property, which Keith says the Yaqui Council had a legal obligation to protect and preserve.
The lawsuit triggers two different concepts that are fairly nationwide, but they're based on Connecticut concepts of law, which is the law of charitable trust. Basically that if there is a charitable use that's been established, it must remain so in perpetuity. The idea being, of course, that people tend to donate toward those causes, and you want them to feel comfortable that if they're donating toward a charitable use, that it stays that way. And the second concept is the concept of public trust law, or the public trust in the environment, which every citizen of the state, and in fact, in the nation, has an interest in lands and the natural resources. You can't just do anything you want with your property, but you have to do it within zoning or within the rules that apply. And here we said that once there was a bird sanctuary established, that created both a charitable trust and also it triggered the public trust in protecting bird habitat. And I had never seen a suit combining those two concepts because it's kind of a rare combination of events, but both of the concepts have been around for a long time.
Keith believes that this legal strategy could be used to protect other Boy Scout camps being sold in other parts of the country as well. Local Boy Scout chapters have either sold or announced intentions to sell camps in Arizona, Illinois, Maine, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And even beyond the legal consideration, Keith, as an Eagle Scout, feels that the Boy Scouts of America has an organizational mission about ethical and moral choices over a lifetime, and that those choices mean not selling the land to a real estate developer.
You don't compound one ethical lapse with another. The Scouts have a very deep relationship to conservation. In fact, if you look on their website, they even say Scouting has a long, proud tradition of conservation service to the nation. And they have a Scout oath. They have an outdoor code. They have Leave No Trace. They have the Outdoor Ethics Program. And they have incorporated outdoor ethics at all program levels, according to them. Yes, I can understand why they would say, well, we really have to make sure we survive. We need to maximize our revenue. That's a very short-term decision, and it betrays their conservation ethic.
I feel like there are so many competing ethical concerns. I mean, the conservationist in me says, do all we can to ensure that the land itself, which is a value, which is a good, is as publicly and widely available as possible, whether for bird sanctuary or for human use or simply for sort of a pure conservationist aspect. The Justice for Sexual Assault Survivors ethic, that's sort of competing with that, says sell this land to the highest bidder because this organization, charitable, private, whatever, is in debt to generations of those who were harmed by their actions. And they owe a debt and they have an asset. They need to sell that asset in order to pay that debt. How do we manage those competing and I think both highly valuable concerns?
They have more assets than they need to pay off that debt. So it's not as though that debt wouldn't be paid if they did the right thing and sold this for conservation. Now they're short about $2.6 million worth of assets, which they would have otherwise had. That financial pressure then requires them perhaps to consolidate or puts more pressure on them to do that, which then results in this sale. They're now trying to, of course, maximize their revenue because they're a little short and they're trying to make up for that. It's not as directly related to that. These sexual abuse suits were certainly a founding cause or pressure that resulted in all this, but it's then the next choices that they make.
Okay, quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from an attorney who represents Boy Scout survivors.
I really don't care about the woes of these local councils. It's just too little, too late. They've been on the road to perdition for 75 years, and now they've arrived. You're in hell. Welcome. It's where you deserve to be.
Okay, we're back with our discussion of how the Boy Scouts of America are making money to fund a victims' compensation fund they're establishing as part of ongoing bankruptcy court negotiations. The Boy Scouts of America have mandated that local Boy Scout chapters around the U.S. make contributions to this fund, and local chapters are selling off camps in several states to raise those funds. In many cases, this is highly desirable land, desirable both to developers and to conservationists.
My name's Tim Kosnoff. Currently, I'm individually and co-jointly representing 17,000 men who have filed claims in the Boy Scout bankruptcy, alleging that they were raped in the organization. They range in age from 8 to 93.
Tim is a lawyer based in Seattle, Washington. He's part of a group of law firms calling themselves Abused in Scouting. They make up the largest block of claimants in the bankruptcy. Now, Tim has heard some of the many stories of former Boy Scouts who allege abuse. The individual stories that can get lost in the numbers of 82,000 victims.
The stories are, you know, are harrowing. I mean, they wear me out. I can't listen to but a couple a day. it's just you can't help but internalize it. And, you know, they live it again as they tell it in front of you. You know, it's really something, you know, when you talk to a man, he's 87 years old and he's crying on the phone about what happened to him in 1937. And it still has wounded him so painfully that all these years later, it can just reduce him to, you know, to weeping and sobbing, you know, telling it for the first time to a stranger, a lawyer over the phone. I mean, when you sit back and you consider that, I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about the catastrophic nature of these injuries. They call it a wound that won't heal.
Tim believes the biggest priority here should be fair compensation and justice for victims, not whether Boy Scouts land gets sold to developers or conservation-minded organizations.
My responsibility is to obtain justice in the form of financial compensation on behalf of my clients. And, you know, I really can't weigh in on conservation. You know, I know what goes on, but no, I want it to go to the highest bidder. And if some conservation organization can go out and find a patron who'll give them the money, whether it's the federal government or some billionaire, to save this thing, I don't care, as long as the money is green. But no, I'm not going to sacrifice my clients' interests so that, you know, some people that live in some place near the ocean in Connecticut can have access to this place. If they were concerned about that, they should have jumped in and forced the Boy Scouts of America to address its problems long ago.
Now, others are looking for compromise solutions. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal told the AP back in June that he was looking into the possibility of using federal funds from the National Park Service's Land and Water Conservation Fund to help buy Deer Lake and other Boy Scout properties that are up for sale around the country. And in Maine, the state's Land for Maine's Future program has put up half the purchase price to help conservationists buy a 95-acre Boy Scout camp called Camp Gustin. But using public funds from the government raises other concerns. I asked Keith Ainsworth, a Connecticut environmental attorney, about these issues. Are there ethical concerns here with using tax dollars to buy land, knowing that those resources will likely go to pay for the debt incurred from the claims of sexual assault?
Yeah, I've actually heard that sentiment before. And that would be the take of, you know, sort of the guy at the end of the bar. Hey, you know, I don't want my tax dollars paying off guys who abuse kids. That's, you know, that's the last thing I want my money going toward. That's actually the wrong way to look at it. If we're having this national fire sale for camps across the nation, and there's many of them, tens of thousands of acres, this is the same opportunity that we faced as a nation in the late 1800s and early 1900s when we established the national forests, when they were being torn down by logging interests. It's not paying off the people who did bad things. The people who are paying off these judgments or these claims, they're not taking money directly from the government and having it paid. The government's getting something in return. And so as long as the government's getting fair value, they're getting something of value, which is public lands that people can use and generations of people can enjoy. It's a different thing if you were saying, well, we're going to put federal dollars straight into the trust fund to pay off the claims. That would be then a valid critique.
So let's return to the Deer Lake Camp in Connecticut. The Connecticut Mirror reported earlier this month that the Connecticut Yankee Council had received a better offer and would sell the land to a local nonprofit called Pathfinders, which runs camps at Deer Lake. The sale was for a reported $4.75 million. Now, the Connecticut Yankee Council was facing pressure from the state attorney general, the public, and the lawsuit filed by Keith Ainsworth. So they decided to give Pathfinders time to raise enough money to top the commercial offer that was made from Fortitude. As of right now, it's unclear whether any taxpayer dollars will be used to help fund the sale. So following this development, Keith Ainsworth dropped his lawsuit against the Connecticut Yankee Council, believing the sale accomplishes most of its goals. As for the Boy Scouts, Keith says he'd ultimately like to see them survive.
I feel sympathy for them. I really do, because the organization is a fundamentally sound organization and its purposes are still very valid today as they were when the program started in the early 20th century. We need Boy Scouts to be there for the next generation of young men and these days young women.
For Tim Kosnoff, it's different. He actually does not believe the Boy Scouts of America ought to survive this.
The Boy Scouts have exhibited such a disgraceful, outrageous, and despicable disregard for the safety of children. I believe it should be burned to the ground. Maybe somebody else can come up with a scouting program, but these rascals, no, they need to be gone. They need to be gone.
We should note here that we did reach out to the Boy Scouts of America, the Connecticut Yankee Council, and Senator Blumenthal for comment. We didn't receive responses from any of them by airtime, but if we do, we'll post them at our website. I want to thank Molly Osberg, Keith Ainsworth, and Tim Kosnoff for their participation in our story.